The proposal is entitled Achieving Zero Hunger, and it is mainly intended to illustrate that it is possible to do so. My task has been made easier by the presentations which have been made by the three panelists. I think it remains only to be emphasized that the very opening paragraph of the draft Addis Ababa Action Accord is to underscore that our goal is to end poverty and hunger. In other words, MDG 1, the spirit of MDG 1 continues into the SDGs and is very much fundamental to the third Financing for Development Conference. The RBA's joint proposal is basically intended to demonstrate that the proposal to achieve zero hunger is fundamentally viable and affordable. There will be many, I'm sure, who will quibble over various details of the report, but I think that there is very little dispute. There will be very little dispute about the fundamental viability of achieving zero hunger. It is important also for us to remember that 78% of the poor people in the world, according to the World Bank's data, are to be found in the countryside. So addressing rural incomes, raising rural incomes, is fundamental to this task. The relationship between poverty and hunger is, of course, self-evident. I don't need to elaborate on this, and it has already been spoken to. But just to remind you that the poverty line, which has been used by the World Bank and continues to, and is likely to continue to be used for these SDG monitoring purposes, food covers between 50 to 70% of poverty line income, depending, of course, on the context on the country. As the Director General emphasized, in a business as usual scenario, in 2030, 650 million people will remain hungry. This is simply unacceptable. Most of these people are likely to be found in sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia. It has also been emphasized that there are two essential components to what is being proposed. The first is basically agricultural investment, and it's important to remember that agricultural investment has, as has been emphasized, the biggest impact on reducing poverty compared to any other sector. Also, it is important to note that, unfortunately, formal financial institutions often discriminate against the agricultural investments, and particularly against smallholder family farmers. This is precisely why the international community found it fit to establish an institution dedicated to enabling investments among smallholder farmers, which we find today and represented by Ms. Stubbs. The business as usual scenario simply will not achieve the ambition of the SDGs to eliminate hunger and poverty by 2030. We also find ourselves in an unfortunate situation in the world where many countries continue to have a great deal of unemployment and also very significantly underemployment. This is, in fact, not only a phenomenon of developing countries and unfortunately a growing phenomenon in developed countries as well. And future economic prospects remain very uncertain, especially with the recent slowing of the world economy beginning from last year. The second component involves social protection. There is considerable evidence now that well-designed social protection can quickly enable the poor to overcome poverty, hunger, undernutrition. But it's important to recognize that social protection is not only for consumption, but it also enhances productive capacities. This has been demonstrated by various studies, including the work on what is called P2P, from protection to production. Improving diets, of course, enables people to work more and work, and improving diets in the longer term enhances both physical as well as mental capacities. As rural incomes rise, there will be a decline in the need for social protection to fill what is described in the paper as the transfers required to close the poverty gap. Social protection in the world today, unfortunately, remains quite uneven. We have about a billion people in low-income countries as well as in middle-income countries, in 146 low- and middle-income countries who receive some form of social protection. But of the World Bank's estimated 1.2 billion extreme poor, 870 million are uncovered by social protection. They do not receive any form of social protection. And these people are mainly to be found in rural areas. In other words, almost three-quarters of the extreme poor do not get any social protection, and most of them are in the countryside. The greatest shortfalls, of course, in terms of financing social protection is in the low-income countries. We find that of the low-income countries, 47% of the populations are extremely poor, but social protection covers less than a tenth of these populations. The situation, of course, is better as incomes are higher in other societies. This graph and the next one is basically to illustrate to you what is being proposed in the background, technical background paper to the advocacy of the Rome-based agencies. Basically, what is envisaged is that there will be investment requirements. And it's important to remember that investment requirements are not only public, but also private investment requirements. Investment requirements going forward are expected to continue to rise. One portion of it will be for social protection. But the need for social protection for this particular purpose will decline correspondingly, as illustrated by the green line. And the red line basically illustrates what will be earned income from investments. In other words, investments will raise earned incomes even for the poor. And this will enable them also to make modest investments, which will in turn increase productivity, as we have found. The second graph is basically to illustrate what all this means in terms of the poverty line. If you remember that the blue line here is the poverty line. And as earned incomes rise, as represented by the red line, by 2030, earned incomes should exceed the poverty line income, the 125 which was referred to earlier. This will come about largely due to the investments. Investments enhance productive capacity. There will be a corresponding decline, therefore, for the need for social protection for this purpose. These two graphs basically capture what is in what the processes envisage in the paper. Now, as the Director General noted earlier, the average investments required for this purpose would be in the region of 267 billion. This is approximately less than one third of 1% of world economic output in last year. The bill for social protection and publicly required agricultural investments can be afforded by most middle-income countries. Most low-income countries, however, will need assistance. We also know that social protection can make great strides to ending hunger and poverty quickly. But that achievement will not be sustainable without achieving higher earned incomes. And this is why this proposal has two components, the social protection component and the investment component. The early big push, which is envisaged, basically means that the returns come earlier as well. And this is why an early big push basically reduces the longer-term financing costs. Most importantly, this proposal envisages enabling the poor to move out of the vicious cycle of poverty in which they are caught to a virtuous cycle. The evidence is very strong for this, and we believe it can be done. Thank you very much. Zero hunger is possible. I think we can do it together.